Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, present the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2025. Today, stock valuation. And of course, we do have a quiz after I do some work. And this lecture will probably spill into Monday somewhat. But you will find that the spreadsheet is going to do a lot to make this considerably more straightforward than it used to be in the past. And also, as you're reading the textbook, you will know that you have ways to do this without killing yourself with formulas or accounting tables and all of that. We are leveraging Excel these days in the real world. And so it's good that we do it here where we're preparing you for that real world. A look at the numbers here, just before we begin. It was a somewhat bearish day on Wall Street, but it was kind of a bearish day around the world too. It wasn't anything horribly bad, but the Dow was down almost 0.75%. And the S&P 500 was down less, about 0.5%. The NASDAQ, well, actually, it made some gains. A while ago when I was looking at this, it was down more than 1%. But as you can see from the Spark chart, the bulls have been bargain hunting. See this uptick right here in the NASDAQ? That's bargain hunting. The prices went down a lot, and so now it's time to grab some deals. And so it's pushing up. It didn't quite make it to the top. It didn't make it to break even, obviously. For the day, it was down almost 1%, but it was in worse shape earlier, so that's good. Now, in the around the world, taking a look, we can see that the Nikkei had a bad drop near the beginning, but by the end, it almost come back to where it started the morning. It was down only a meaningless 0.02%. And the Hang Seng, it dropped hard right there. You see there on the Hang Seng. But then it began to recover, and by the end it was down, not as much as it had been earlier in the day. And going around and having a look at some other places, Europe was just in a kind of a grouchy mood floating around. That's one index that I wasn't looking at. It was actually did okay a little bit. But if you look at the CAC, which is the Paris Exchange, the CAC 40 was not in good shape at all. And the FTSE, though, the Great Britain, it was positive all day. It just kept climbing. It wasn't a spectacular climb, but by the end, it was up almost a full percent. So something else. There were happy times over in Great Britain. But we were still on the downside. Notice something, that there was a volatility spike just in the early afternoon looking at the VIX, but that spike kind of went away, so I'm not sure what caused all that excitement. Now, here's an interesting thing. Gold has shaved off some of its gains, not a spectacular amount, but that's kind of good news because the apocalypse is maybe postponed a little bit. As you can see, gold dipped down, and then it finally recovered at the end of the day, near the end of the day, but it's still down for the day, which is good news. I don't foresee that it's going to stay on the bear side. It's going to start coming back up here probably by the time we meet on Monday, but we'll see. And of course, oil is just stupidly cheap right now, and eventually that will translate into better gas prices, but it seems like those are stuck above $3 a gallon in a lot of places. Now, here's something I noticed that's kind of interesting. You see the sector map? If you remember from last week, or that past couple of weeks, all the greens and then a few reds, it's almost like it's reversed right now. The greens are now red, and those reds, like, for example, consumer defensive and healthcare, they're green today. And that might tell me that overall the market, investors, traders were selling out, but then they were using the proceeds from sales of stocks in the technology sector and sectors like that to climb in here into this sector right here. What I want to do right now, just for a minute, is I want to show you a couple of stocks and just have a look at them. And it gives you a sense of risk and return. And one I will do is Kellogg, which is actually now called Kellanova. There was some kind of a merger, and it's kind of weird talking about Kellanova. That's a cereal company. Now, if you think about cereal, you think that's a basic. People buy cereal, they eat it, they feed it to their kids. It's sort of the breakfast, the go-to breakfast. Now, there have been a few inroads by breakfast bars and all that, but Kellogg is in that market too. And we would expect something that fundamental to the American culture to have a low beta. So let's have a look at Kellogg and see what we get. And sure enough, look at that beta. I think that may be the lowest beta stock I've ever shown you, 0.25. That is an extremely conservative stock. The downside of that is, as you saw in the capital asset pricing model, there is a direct linear relationship between the beta of a stock and the expected return to the stock. So a low beta stock, you should expect not to get a lot out of that stock. And so we look at this, and I'm doing this partly to just remind you of that calculation of holy period return. Let's look at what the projection is for the total holy period return of a year to this stock. We go in here and we get our calculator out, and we say, okay, the stock is projected to have a price in 1 year of $83.30. Divide that by the price you would pay today, a year previous, $83.02. Now we subtract 1, and then we multiply the result by 100. So your capital gain return is 0.34%. That's lousy. That's not good at all. And then we add the dividend in, which is a nice 2.8%. And we get an overall total expected return for a one-year hold, buy it and sell it in a year, of 3.14%. That's not spectacular. That's very low. But that's also because it is a super low beta stock. This is not a bad stock by any means. It is a stock that a defensive investor would take on. You're taking a low risk and you expect a low return. That's what that securities market line was showing. If you want higher returns, you're going to have to find higher beta stocks. In this case, not good at all. So let's turn this around just for a minute here. And let's look at something that might be a little more reputable. And I'm doing this for a couple of reasons. I'm going to take Apple, AAPL. And keep in mind Kellanova while we do Apple. Here's Apple. It's currently pricing at $258.45, and there's a little post-market activity there. I'll just ignore for the time being. But let's see its projection in a year. So we take the 1 year out, just like we did before, which is, in this case, $252.36. And we divide that by the current price, a year hold period, $258.45. Minus 1 times 100. This stock is projected to lose The capital gain part is a capital loss of 2.36%. You will lose on the price of this stock for a one-year hold. Now let's add in the dividend. Maybe that'll help us a little bit. The dividend, oh look, it's a lousy 0.4%. So your total holding period return for Apple is a negative 1.96%. Now if we look at the beta is above 1. This is a risky stock, and it is going to lose you money. Now think about Kellanova, a very low risk stock, and it makes you a little money. So in a kind of a broad perspective on a portfolio, Kellanova is, if you want low beta stocks, Kellanova dominates Apple. Here's the problem though. Investors oftentimes invest on names, on feelings. And so you see Apple, well, Apple is a great company. I'm going to buy some of that stock. And that's the wrong way to invest. You stick to the numbers, trust the science. And it's telling us that Apple is not a good fit. If it's got a high risk, higher than market risk, somewhat higher, and the projection is it's going to lose money over the next year. On the other hand, you look at a Kellanova, totally unsexy, low return, but you're taking hardly any risk with buying it. That's the lesson here, is that sometimes those names, investors grab because of a name. They'll buy Tesla, they'll buy Apple, they'll buy Microsoft, Meta. But then when you look behind the curtain, the numbers are telling you, this is not a good idea to jump into a stock like this. And this is part of what I'm doing with trying to get you to think for yourselves about investments. Not what the media says, not what your friends say, not even, I buy Apple products, so I'm going to buy their stock. Why would you do that? There's a big difference between what you like as a product and what you are going to profit from as an investment. And this is a great example of that. Apple is not a good risk right now. High risk, negative expected return. It is way down off the securities market line. In other words, it has a negative Jensen's alpha because it is below the securities market line. You're looking for positive Jensen's alphas. This stock has a quite negative Jensen's alpha. Matter of fact, there are some websites that actually will, as part of the screens, but you have to pay for those sites, they'll show you the current Jensen's Alpha on the stock, projected one-year Jensen's Alpha. And this one is really ugly, Apple is. So keep that in mind. Let me do one just to do this again. Let's look at another hot property kind of company, NVDA. Whoops, let's try that again. Let's see if it lives up to its beta. Now, this is a very high beta stock. So let's run the numbers on it here. Get those both in the same screen window here. Okay. So I can take projected in 1 year, $218.51 divided, that'll be the projected price, that's the projected price in 1 year, divided by 180.28, $180 that it closed at today. It's down even more now. Okay, so we minus 1 from that ratio equals, and then we times it by 100. So the capital gain is a whopping 21.20%. Add in that lousy little dividend yield of 0.02%. So the overall total holding period return for NVIDIA is a very good 21.25%. And you are also taking a whole lot of risk, even in a well-diversified portfolio. However, as you can see, this is a stock that lives up to its beta. It's probably near the securities market line. And that's what you're looking for. So you're seeing two companies that are hot talk right now, NVIDIA and Apple. But with your own eyes, you can see that they are not commensurate in terms of investment quality. And that's just a lesson for today on why our science of investments over the long period of time, instead not trading day to day, is good. It helps us see what really is a good investment opportunity versus what is definitely not, and Apple is not. Notwithstanding how famous Apple is, how many people have Apple Watches, how many people have Macs, the numbers are not lying. They are giving us what is one of our best tools for investments. Not necessarily, you can buy an Apple Watch, an Apple phone, a Mac. That's not what we're saying here. We're saying that as an investment, the core corporation itself, that's not a good idea. Anyway, on to our fun stuff for the day here. Let me show you. As a matter of fact, while I'm doing this, why don't you fire attendance radar up? I'll put this on your side so you have it. Whoops, turn it on. And then it's set for you. Yeah, that one. Okay, here we go. And I'll set you up for what we're going to do today. In your Canvas Files folder, you have stock valuation. This is kind of a sprawling spreadsheet worksheets within the spreadsheet. And as I think I mentioned it on Monday, to do these calculations with a scientific calculator would take you, just one problem would take you 10 to 15 minutes to do. With a financial calculator, it would take you less time, but it would still take you a considerable amount of time. And also, you would not have any document. You would have an answer, but you would not have a spreadsheet that you could save so that you could see how you got to that answer. Excel is an integral part of the world of business. Hence why you're going to learn how to do these in Excel, because that's how you're going to do them when you get out there into the workforce. You're going to use Excel. You're not going to use financial calculators. You're not going to use accounting tables. You're going to use Excel. Hence why I assign you the requirement to learn Excel, get certified, and we use Excel in the classroom. So doing that right now, let me give you just a bit of background on how you do this. Why we're doing this. The first thing that I would want to point out to you, and I should say this, and I think I've said this before a few times, and I had this experience as a consultant. And there were a couple of companies where I'd been with them for a time, And they had made it, they'd gone to break even, and they had profitability. And they were public corporations. And there was one stands out in my mind. It was late afternoon. We were having a meeting of the principals. It was plenary. And we wanted to get it kind of done so that we could go and have steaks at a nice restaurant just outside of Houston. But then the CEO brought up a question. He said, look, our last annual shareholders meeting was not pretty because stockholders were coming up to do their 2 minutes and they were asking, why don't we get a dividend? Where is our dividend? Now, a dividend is actually a signal. You give out a dividend because it is a sign that your company is good now. For example, you, madam, are my long-lost niece. Well, once I find out that you're around, of course, you don't want to talk to me, but after a while, you know, I send you $500 for Christmas. And then you like me a little bit. But then, you know, the next year, I know that if I want you to continue to have trust in me and know that I have made it and I'm wealthy and all that, I need to really send you another $500 check. And so I create a signal to you. I'm worth you liking. I've got money. But at the same time, I mean, that's a little cynical, but the point I'm trying to make is that in a company, you signal that you are getting your act together by issuing that dividend. And then you continue. But that's what I told the director of the, the CEO said, is it time for us to declare a dividend? And I said, it's a double-edged sword. Yes, it is time if we want the shareholders to know that we are kind of on the road to success. There were still a lot of troubles ahead, and projections of difficulties, but the problem is that once we give out that dividend, we have got to keep doing it. Because the stockholders will expect it. And if we don't give it out, that's worse than when we didn't give out dividends to begin with. Or if we cut the dividend. We give them, the proposal was, how about a quarter, 25 cent a share dividend? Okay, can we keep doing this? Are the projections enough that we can keep doing this? Because if we cut that dividend because we had a bad year, the investors are going to sell our stock. Our stock price will go down, and the ones who are still with us at the next shareholders meeting after that are going to bitch at us. So, yeah, the expectation comes in that dividends, once you start them, you should continue them. Now, the reality is that for a few years, they will be turbulent. There might be a dividend of 25 cents in this case, and then the next year, We actually weren't doing very well the next year, and we were talking about just a zero dividend. But we figured out, well, we're going to have to do something. We can't do 25 cents. It turned out what we did was 8.5 cents per share dividend. So we were still in the game. And it will be for younger companies that start issuing dividends. They will be up and down for a period of maybe a few years to 5 years. Ultimately, the first goal is to stabilize the dividend, to get it to stay at a place permanently so that there is a confidence that we can do this. So that's the first step. And then the next step is, as a company ages, it doesn't want to keep the dividend constant. It wants to stabilize a constant growth of the dividend year over year. That is older, mature companies. And to prove to myself that this was actually real, I took a handful of companies, 10 companies, and I looked at their dividend pattern. These were old, seasoned, established companies. And I looked at their dividends year over year. Okay, this year's dividend divided by last year's dividend minus 1 times 100. So you get a percent growth. Then that dividend divided by the previous year's dividend minus 1, that company's growth. And sure enough, these companies, these old companies, their dividends were growing at a relatively constant rate. So what I'm telling you here is actually backed in the real world. that there is a process that goes on where companies first don't pay a dividend. They are a real bear to try to value, get an intrinsic value per share. The next one are the companies that have a constant dividend. They are easy. And so are companies that have a constant growth dividend. Those are the first, early sheets here. They're so predictable. The math of them is so straightforward that they are the ones that are very attractive to heavy investment houses, because we can find the intrinsic price. So we can see when it's overvalued or undervalued, just because we know where the current, where the right price should be, year to year or whatever. Excuse me. So now let me reel it back a little bit here. And I talked about this last week. The going concern assumption. It is absolutely necessary in accrual accounting. We assume that in any given period, the company will be there in the next period. Hence, we can create accounts payable, accounts receivable, all of those features that we have a confidence that in any given period K, the company will exist in year K plus one. So that's crucial. And in finance, what that translates to is that the company's evidence of profitability, its dividends, will keep going for the foreseeable future. In other words, forever. Doesn't matter whether that's true or not. It's how we model many things in physics and a lot of things in chemistry, in quantum physics, and in normal physics, and in finance. Let me start with a little formula here for you. All of this comes from mathematics. This is not invented by finance. It's math. The present value of a constant growth, of a zero growth annuity is the payment, or let's put the dividend, I'll put it as dividend, the dividend over the discount rate. So in other words, if I had you're going to get $500 from me forever. I am lying to you. I'm not paying you a dime. $500. And let's put a discount rate on that of 3.85%. So the present value of that infinite stream of yearly $500 payments is going to be what it's worth now is $500 divided by 0.0385. So if I pull up the handy calculator to do that, I would see that I would take $500 divided by 0.0385. It's worth $12,987 right now. That's the value of it. Kind of a side note here. Now, I teach these groups that come from other places in the world, and I teach them kind of like crash courses that I teach you in a real short time frame. They're very bright, but not necessarily so much so in finance. That's why they're coming, to learn Western-style capitalist finance. And I'll go there to help them. But this very bright young man, he was an older man. He said, wouldn't it be an infinite amount of money? Because it's going on forever. Why wouldn't that be an infinite amount of money? And that actually, it's a logical question, except that I pointed out the time value of money. That first couple of $500 checks, maybe for the first 10, 20 years, Yeah, okay. But when you're getting out there to 50 years, 100 years, 1,000 years, that $500 as a present value is virtually nothing. That's why it's the sum of those payments actually declines to a stable place. It asymptotically approaches $12,987. So that's kind of the basis of this. Now you say, well, where would that actually come in the real world? There are two places, and I'll mention one right now. Preferred stock. Preferred stock has how much you're going to get right on the certificate. It says the dividend is 4% par value, $120. So every year, forever, you will get 4% of $120. It's a classic perpetuity. And it's a flat perpetuity. It is a no growth perpetuity. It doesn't change. It just stays that amount forever. So that's why preferred stock is actually quite easy to calculate the intrinsic value. Because you can see right on the certificate, it's virtually telling you what the current intrinsic value per share of the stock is. Let me take you now back. The first one that I'll show you is a simplistic model, not very realistic, but it gives you, it's a good platform to show you the more robust ones that we use in practice. And this one has the first spreadsheet, the first worksheet, that you'll see is one where you're going to buy a stock and you're going to keep it for 3 years, get the dividends, and then you're going to dump the stock at the end of the third year after you get your third dividend. So in the case I show here, you buy the stock. Now you're going to get a dividend at the end of the year of $1.90. Then a year after that, you'll get a dividend of $2.35. And then the third year, you get a dividend of $2.75. And then you dump the stock. And you project that you'll get $15.89. Now, this is not very realistic, but it does show us the elements that will take us to the more realistic scenarios. In this case, all we're doing with this spreadsheet is we're taking the present value 1 year out, discounted at 6.95% of $1.90, plus the present value 2 years out, discounted at 6.95% of $2.35. And then plus the present value in 3 years, discounted at 6.95% of $2.75. And then we're adding the present value in 3 years, discounted at 6.95% of $15.89. That's all the sheet does. But if you've ever done a present value by hand, this is a lot like work. Just doing those negative exponents one after the other, making sure you don't make a calculation mistake. And the intrinsic value of this stock from this calculation is $19.07. That's its intrinsic value. Now, again, it's somewhat it's kind of unrealistic. Well, how do you know the price and all that kind of stuff in 3 years? But it shows you what we're doing. All we're doing is a sum of present values. That's all any of these dividend models are. Notice here on the side, I give you a word, horizon value. This is a word that you'll see in the other models. Certainly in the last model. As a matter of fact, the last model is called the horizon model. Horizon value is some value that is on out there somewhere on the horizon. And we rely on that horizon value rather critically, as it were. Now let me take you to the next model. This formula, PV equals dividend over R, is assuming that there is no growth of the dividends. They are just a flat dividend like a preferred stock. As a matter of fact, this is the formula we use for finding a preferred stock. This is called the no growth perpetuity. This is actually an application of a general formula for growth, for a constant growth perpetuity. The formula is just a generalized example, a generalized version of this one. The present value, the price now of a stock, will be the dividend one period out divided by the discount rate minus the growth rate. Now, D1 is the current dividend, D0 times 1 plus the growth rate. In other words, the current dividend, you grow out one period. This is critical to the formula. You don't use the current dividend in the formula. You use the dividend one period out. It's just how the math of it works. It's nothing magic. It's nothing. Don't try to think about it. You just use the value one period into the future for the constant growth. And if you do that, you will get the intrinsic price of a constant growth of dividend stock. That's the second model right here. All you have to do is tell it what the current dividend is. It'll figure out dividend one because it'll take one plus the growth rate, which you put here, and then you use the discount rate in the bottom, and there's your stock. In this case, the company has just issued a $1.20 dividend. These dividends will grow for the foreseeable future at 2.50% per year. And the discount rate in the denominator that we're going to use is 8.55%. So all it's doing is taking $1.20 times 1 plus 0.025 to get the dividend next period. And then it's dividing that by 8.55% minus 2.50%. That's all it's doing. But it does speed up the calculation nicely. And you get $20.33 for the intrinsic value of the stock. This is, again, we are incrementally leveraging Excel to do what I'm sure you are capable of doing on your own, but not as rapidly. This just does it in a blink of an eye. And notice that if I really did have a no growth perpetuity, I could just set the growth rate to zero here and get a no growth. So this formula can be used to value preferred stocks because they just don't have a growth. They just have a dividend. So this one, I could have that one that I gave you before. If we take a share preferred stock, let's say that we have a preferred stock. The dividend is, I said, 4%, 0.04 times the par value of $120. Okay, there's your dividend. It doesn't grow. And let's take a discount rate of, let's say, 7%. Oh, it's 1%. 7%. That's the price of that preferred stock, intrinsic price right there. So you can use this one for preferred. Just set the growth rate of dividends to zero, because the preferred stock just pays the same dividend forever. So this one will value preferred stock as well. So this is getting us a little bit more power in our portfolio for valuing stocks. Let me point out something here. You see that formula down there at the bottom? Notice in the denominator, R minus G. Well, what would happen if your growth rate exceeded your discount rate? The denominator would be negative. This means that we can value stocks, only stocks, where the growth rate does not exceed the discount rate. In a more practical, well, actually in a broader setting, I think I mentioned this term earlier in the course, maybe I didn't. There's something called maximum sustainable growth rate. In other words, there is a growth rate beyond which a company cannot survive more than a few years. Companies, well, we've been growing at 35% every year for the last 3 years. That's a company that is on the verge of self-destruction. This is the math of it, and we have plenty of examples where we can show where companies that go too long with a growth rate that is unsustainable, they die. It's very much like the same thing that happens in a car. If you go above its maximum speed, where recommended speed, yeah, you can get there and you can keep going down the highway, but eventually you'll burn out the engine of the car. So this is in kinetics as well, this idea that every system has a maximum rate at which it can sustain growth. And this model right here is embedding that concept of maximum sustainable growth rate. And this is one of the things that was quite frustrating in one consulting job. There was a company I had, it had been growing at a rate of about 15% per year. And they were in their second year, and they saw 15% more, maybe even a little higher than that. They were projecting like 18%. And telling them, slow down, was a no-go. They didn't want me as a consultant anymore. We're just going to keep going. We're on fire, by gosh. And 4 or 5 years later, they were gone. They were just gone. The company imploded under its growth rate, because it couldn't be sustained. So keep that in mind, that this formula does have meaning beyond just these parameters, these variables, and all that kind of stuff. Now, what I will do is I'm going to lay the next one. The hardest model is the horizon value model, where you have a horizon, like I did in the first one, but you actually calculate the horizon. But all you have to do in any of these models is just put in the numbers and let Excel carry it to the finish line. You don't have to do calculations. You just have to be able to put in the numbers where they belong. First of all, identify which model it is. Now, in the next quiz, I will mirror what I will also do on the final. I'll give you a problem with a dividend that you use the dividend model. Then I'll give you a problem where you'll use the constant growth rate model. And then I'll give you a problem where you'll use the horizon value model. And there are two of these. I did one for 5 years and one for 7 years. They're the same model, but I'm trying to figure out a way I can do it for a general number of years without using a macro. And so far I've got nothing. But I would not give you anything but a 5 or a 7 year to do in a quiz or a test. But if you know how to put these in there, you're in business. What I'm going to do now is send you on your way to the quiz. And as far as anything to do with today, that's all I have for you. I thank you.